Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low.
What's up? What's up, everybody? This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And, of course, we have to bring in Susie Sunshine. With all the bad things happening in the world, we got to bring in our smiling Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. Angie, what's up, my dear?
Oh, not much. Just in full-on holiday mode, guzzling eggnog, eating fudge for every meal, you know.
Well, that's great. That's the way it should be. That's why I have to get all the elastic pants out this time of year.
That's it. The beauty part about working from home. Why, you know, you wear elastic pants all day long is what I do. So it works.
So, Angie, of course, we always talk about grains first, but I want to talk about a little bit about the cattle markets first. I know that's not what you do, number one, but I do want to talk about them a little bit because, obviously, the feeders have fallen out of bed, which is not really a surprise. You and I kind of talked about it when they were, everybody was buying and nobody could get enough of them, remember? And I said, well, hell, yeah. I think we're going to see down in the mid-140s, and that would be a spot to step in. And, of course, then they went down three and some and change on Wednesday. What's your thought of that market, and does it mean anything to you, and does it mean anything to what you do?
Yeah, I mean, we pay attention to it, or I pay attention to it, of course. You know, for a multitude of reasons. The feeder market is important because, of course, that's one third of our corn demand, and it's a significant portion of meal demand on the soybean side and all of those things. So, you know, I watch what that market's doing because I want to see what we have going on, you know, on that side of things. And, yeah, I mean, the feeder market's really struggled, and I've been somewhat negative feeders for a little bit just because of the heifer retention that we had a year ago. And you know, to me, you retain, you know, mama cows, heifer retention, you're retaining the moms out there. And so, you know, in my opinion, I think you were going to see a slew of spring calves hit the marketplace here as we worked our way into winter. So I'm not overly surprised, you know, and I'm not heavily involved in that market in the sense that I'm out looking at cows or calves or, you know, talking to a lot of folks that are feeders. But, you know, it didn't surprise me that we saw the January board back off. We're seeing, you know, a slight inversion if you look at the Jan to the March here. And the March board showing some trouble on the chart, you know, trading at the lowest level today that it's been at since September, you know, so you have seen a really strong downward move there. You're looking at the January market is seen a big move downward as well. You know, and so I'm, like I said, I'm not overly surprised. I think you'll see people start to return in from a buyer standpoint. I always have such a hard time, you know, really valuing, big moves ahead of a holiday, especially in a market like the cattle, you know, and stuff like that, just because it can be so darn volatile for no real reason and do some significant damage to the chart. And then next thing you know, after the first of the year, when volume returns and people come back to sit in front of their desks, you know, we start to actually trade in a true pattern. But yeah, I mean, you're looking at the feeder market down on the low side of things, the lowest, the Jan board's also the lowest that we've seen since that September time frame, and so we're just waiting to see where that buying interest is going to return. It appears as though we're testing a support level, and you know, the demand and need for cattle to feed going into 2018 has not gone away. I mean, there's been nothing significant that has changed story-wise here, so to me, I think we resume our long-term trend, but we may be doing some damage to the chart here in the short term, and mostly because I think the volume's low and it's a holiday week going into the long stretch of 2 weeks of holiday that we see every year at the end of the year.
Well, that's what I told Chip, and that's what I told Rural Rally Radio and TV. And I said, you know, hey, you know, if it wasn't the holiday season, I'd probably be stepping in right here. But, you know, one of the things you have to be very careful about when we're in this time of year is you can get run over by accident. And I don't really feel like being forced to make a decision in a market that's very thin. You know, if the market's had plenty of volume, you know, I can take my chances, right? I don't worry about a big move, but certainly, you know, they could run these in any direction if you're wrong, and then you're forced to kind of say, well, how do I want to handle this? And I think that's always one of the problems I see. What about you?
Oh, I agree 100%. I mean, and that's, I actually, my CFO does some trading and likes to do things like that. And he was asking me about, you know, soybeans, not to change the subject that we're talking about here, but it's very much the same. You know, you can do damage to a chart and assume that you're finding a support level and it's a good opportunity to get in and buy. And, you know, the reality is you're just going to kind of try to catch a knife, you know, and with the volume being low and things like that, the market will make moves that don't necessarily make sense and they'll correct themselves after the first of the year. And so, you know, and that begets wrong moves. You know what I mean? So you don't have people stepping in, so you can do further damage or assume that things are getting even worse when the reality is it's just kind of a snowball effect. And once the holiday season's over and people are actually back to actively trading, things will regain their footing and start trading in the right direction again. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of times I tell my customers that this time of year, you know, if the market's moving to the upside, then sure, let's pay attention. Let's put some target orders in, you know, let's take advantage and reward the market if we're seeing a rally. But if this time of year we see a downward move, I tell them to calm down most of the time and to not take it too seriously, because it's not likely to remain in place after real trading resumes after the first of the year.
Well, let's snowball. Let's switch partners. Let's dance. Anyways,
right? So,
I mean, you know, again, and we're going to talk about soybeans when we come back from the break, because I think, you know, soybeans, you and I talked about this, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, whatever, and we felt that there was going to be some heavy pressure on soybeans. And I think when they broke that 985 level, that became, you know, fairly ugly. And I think they could get ugly. And I don't know that it'll be the volume that'll get ugly. And I think that you do see a lot of misconceptions in charts this time of year. But again, one thing I always tell everybody is the chart's the chart. I mean, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, the footprint is the footprint, whether it is volume or not, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the hardest part is you may not see a correction, or you may not see a resumption of better trade, or even if you do see a resumption to the upside, the downside target that you're putting in place right now remains as a support level or something that, you know, traders' eyes go to when they look at the overall continuous market action there. And so, yeah, I mean, it's something that you can say, okay, maybe this doesn't really matter because it's the holiday. But you kind of have to hold your breath too and wonder, you know, specifically in soybeans, because this time of year, we're working our way through the South American weather talk.
Right. You know what I mean? I got to cut you short here. We'll pick this up after the break. I you know me, what can I tell you? I hate to cut you off because you always say such wonderful things, but this is the Bubba Show and I am Todd Bubba Horowitz. And of course, we want to remind you to download the show every single day at libertytalk.fm, and you can hear Angie all the time, and you know she's one of our regulars. She's our grain expert, our grain and we'll make her a livestock expert too. In the meantime, this is the Bubba Show. We'll be right back. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure that you also get Bubba's daily updates. All you have to do is go to bubbatrading.com, and of course, I will email them to you every single day, free. So go check it out at bubbatrading.com. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back with more from Angie after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess. Also the vice president of Range and Citizens Elevator. All right, so you were saying before I so rudely cut you off, go ahead and finish your thought, my dear.
Well, it's one of those things where, you know, discussing chart damage and, you know, whether you can get a resumption of actual range bound trade that you saw prior to that damage taking place, which in soybeans, you know, we're looking at, you know, that 980 had been a pretty decent front month support with some concern. You know, for me, I thought if we failed at 980, we would see the market move towards that 960, 963 range. And here we sit today, you know, January beans are trading 953. So we've actually broke that and kind of continued lower. And the one thing in particular with soybeans that's important to keep in mind is the importance of the South American weather pattern or the South American weather and when it comes to its impact on production. So you can see the market make a significant shift or transition, you know, that takes place during the holiday into January. You know, we have seen it before. I'll never forget. I had a farmer that owned soybean calls and the market rallied the second week of January. He had to move beans at harvest time and we did a minimum price contract, sold the cash and bought some calls. And I remember he had, you know, about $1.20 in equity in his soybean calls. And we ended up putting in a target order. He wanted like $1.75 or something. I don't even remember, but we actually had the highest trade. And that's why it sticks in my mind. We had the highest trade of the soybean market for that year take place in January because we had built in such a significant risk premium when it came to South American weather. We confirmed that the South American crop was in fact going to be okay or more than okay at the time, and the market took a nosedive. We ended up planting more than we had anticipated, and weather was okay. And, you know, that's a true concern for me this year, simply because we have a carryout that the USDA bumped up last week, you know, and take what you or say what you want to about USDA reports. It's still what the market's going to follow. And they did bump that up last week, and there is some talk, some concern that perhaps we still have, you know, a bit too aggressive of an export expectation projection from the USDA simply based on what we're seeing for sales and things like that. And the talk that Brazil's crop could be as large as last year is starting to surface. So, you know, you're looking at the potential of another 200 to 300 million bushel of production that is not factored in, you know, to the USDA numbers coming out of Brazil. There is some concern over the Argentina drought. I think that's more of a corn issue than a bean one. But, you know, we've been waiting. You've heard in soybeans, it seems like for 4 years in a row now, at least 3 years, you know, that we should break $9. I don't know if we will. I don't know if we have to. But it is something to kind of keep in mind that soybeans are the last one on the list that hasn't really taken that significant move to the downside because we've had oversupply. You know, thank goodness for China. We had that Brazilian drought 2 years ago that really cut into their production and kind of ate through a lot of our extra stocks that we had. And so, you know, soybeans are kind of, like I said, that you've seen wheat, you've seen corn move to levels lower than, you know, what a lot of folks had anticipated they would have to go to. And soybeans have managed to, it's been like trying to get a beach ball underwater sort of deal. And so it is something that I'm concerned with. Having said that, though, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to see him retest the $10 mark once before the South American crop is confirmed, simply because we have a La Nina weather pattern. And we know that China is aggressive at, you know, when it comes to buying when the market moves low enough. So it'll definitely be something to watch, but I don't. It'll be like standing in front of a freight train in either direction once it decides it wants to move, you know, one way or the other.
No, I understand, but once they get low enough, I would step in anyways. I wouldn't care. But now, the feeders in corn, would you think that this crush down in feeders is leading to possibly higher corn prices?
The lower moving feeders mean?
Yeah, I'm calling it crush. They got crushed. So yeah. Does that indicate higher corn prices are coming?
It could, you know, because if you get a move lower in feeders, that results in more people buying, you know, buying in the feeders or picking up the pace. It's so hard in cattle though, because you have, you know, a fixed amount of supply. You know what I mean? In all commodities, it's that way, but in cattle, it's even more special, you know, specifically because it takes, you know, so long gestation takes, you know, with 9 months, 10 months, whatever. And you know, your feeders aren't ready to make it to the lot for another 6-7 months. I think it's like 18 months, you figure, before you can see a surge in available supply if the market moves low enough and demand steps in and stuff like that. But, you know, feeders moving lower, of course, will allow feedlots to put more in. But then if you have more on feed, does that impact your fats? Do they move lower? You know, something like that taking place. You know, I prefer to see higher cattle prices, you know, to encourage corn prices moving higher. But, you know, there are some folks that'll say, you know, lower feeders encourage, you know, that ratio is a little bit different. So that's a potential. The biggest thing that we see right now that's really dragging on corn, I think, is low ethanol values. Like the ethanol, I think it was just last week, Chicago, you know, wholesale ethanol fell to its lowest level in several years. And you know, we're the only country in the world right now, it seems, that isn't looking to significantly increase its ethanol blends or ethanol usage. You know, you've seen China come out and say they want to. Japan is. Brazil's looking at doing different things. I think India is joining into the fray there on that. And here we sit. You know, we have plenty of ethanol. We had record large stocks here a couple weeks ago, and we're producing the heck out of it. And value, of course, remains low. One way to fix that, you know, and it's always a struggle for me as a libertarian type person who's not a big fan of government intervention, but a 15% blend, you know, a move towards that in 2018 would substantially help to resolve our burdensome ethanol stock situation. And then, of course, push corn. You know, I think that'd be good for a 20-25 cent rally in corn, more so than feeders, just because, you know, the cattle market and the strength that we've seen in livestock and things of that nature these last couple of years really hasn't translated to increased feed per the USDA. Again, take it with a grain of salt. You know, of course, the oversupply of available feed wheat in the eyes of traders and, you know, DDGs and soy meal and stuff like that has limited the idea that we're going to see a significant increase in feedings. But, you know, it'll definitely be something to watch, because the more animals you have eating, the more you're able to chew through, no pun intended.
Yes, you know, you intended a pun. I know you did. Go ahead.
Oh, I totally did. It's just like the snowball one earlier. I can't help it. But yeah, I mean, the more animals you have to feed, the more you're able to use up these extra supplies. And that's really what we need. You know, so it's definitely something that we're watching. You know, if these guys are, I say guys, you know, I'm talking about the feedlot operators, the guys that are looking to buy these cheaper feeders, you know, they really need to see cheaper feeders, just simply because they've really struggled with, you know, actually making money. You know, the feeder cost has been pretty high. The live, you know, your cash cattle hasn't been as high as what some would like to see it. You know, at least there's been some cheap corn available, but it's still been hard to, you know, see cattle crush be in the black for some guys. And so that's something that we will definitely be paying attention to as we work our way ahead here.
Well, and seeing there you have it. And this is the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains. And this is the Bubba Show. And of course, I want to remind you about our high school investing program. Don't forget, we're trying to help young kids become financially literate. And of course, we support that program. And now we're looking for some help from you. And if you go to patreon.com/Bubba Trading, you can certainly help us out there. We want to make sure that we can continue to add on. We've got 300 high schools now, and of course Big Bubba picks up the tab himself and is looking for a little help. And don't forget to go to libertytalk.fm and download the Bubba Show every day, as well as if you want to get my daily update emailed to you every day after the market closes, which I cover all the markets, what I saw that day and what I'm looking for the next day. You can go to BubbaTrading.com and, of course, just sign up. It's free. And I email for free, too. No postage. No. And, of course, I want to get ready for the new farming season. I know we're on a little vacation now, but in the meantime, if you want some help with your marketing plan for next year, all you have to do is reach out to me. You can reach me at Bubba@BubbaTrading.com, and we'll be happy to help you get prepared for the new year. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be back with Angie Setzer right after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Whistle is 10 o'clock.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And Angie, so now corn is obviously ridiculously cheap. And of course, we're getting ready to do marketing plans for the new year. And right now, it's my guess that if we plant now, if we were planting now, corn is going to be, it's going to cost us more to input it than we're going to get out. What do you think? And what's going to happen?
Oh yeah, I mean it's such a struggle right now. I mean, I really have customers that are looking at some of these values. I mean, the hardest thing for most folks right now that I deal with is looking at old crop corn. So, 2017 was a rough year. Weather was poor, at least perceived to be poor by many growers. They did not expect to have the yields they did. So the one positive for 2017 is that yields were higher. However, prices when it comes to your cash values, they really stink. I mean, there's a lot of folks. I was in North Dakota last week. They're well below the cost of production because their basis, you know, the difference between cash price and futures is so wide. It's made their futures value, or their cash value, excuse me, you know, considerably low. I mean, you're talking sub $3 corn up that way. Even around here in Iowa, there's a lot of values, you know, basis values that are making corn in that 3.305, you know, maybe even down to 2.90 sort of range. And so a lot of guys are really scratching their head as to what to do. You look out towards next year and you actually have some reasonable values that you can sell at. We're still looking at 382 and a half or so on the D's, 392 on the March. I expect that carry to get wider. So we've been hedging on the D's and, you know, I feel pretty confident for many of my growers that if they, you know, trade properly and pay attention to, you know, what they're doing for new crop, they can actually still plant this spring at a profitable level. The hard part is how do you, look past losing, you know, a potentially exceptional amount of money on the old crop stuff you just produced, you know, that's hard. That's a hurdle. It's been one of those things that's been interesting to see. Here in Iowa, we have a lot of fall application of anhydrous, which is a nitrogen that guys are able to get into the ground that basically overwinters. And then once the soil temperatures warm back up in the spring, it's able to release and you plant the seed into it and the plant is able to take off. You know, it's kind of like using Miracle-Gro potting soil. It's already got the stuff it needs to help your seeds grow a lot better sort of deal. And so when you see anhydrous application in the fall, that means that's going to be corn the following year, because it's very difficult to transition away from that, you know, and put soybeans in. So as long as Mother Nature cooperates, you know, that's going to be corn. And here in Iowa, we saw a lot of anhydrous applications. So there's still a lot of guys that are going to be married to planting corn next spring. And so that's my concern right now, is that you look and 382 or so on the D's doesn't tend to be anything that, you know, folks get really excited about. But the reality is if we, you know, the biggest concern we have this spring is that we see 92 million acres of corn production put into the ground. And we don't see prices actually take a significant rally. Now, having said that, I think we do see some short-term upside, you know, simply because there are a couple stories. I mentioned Argentina being dry. You know, Argentina is the third largest corn exporter in the world. They are a very significant part of the global corn marketplace. And they're dry. Southern Brazil's dry. There is some conversation that the Brazilian farmer cannot afford necessarily to put in second crop corn. I mean, they're looking at sub $2 corn domestically in Brazil. And so, you know, there's a lot of talk there that these guys in Brazil are not going to be in a big hurry to put in the second crop corn. And that was what really pushed them over the edge last year into overproduction, where they have basically stepped in and kind of taken over the global corn market. So if we were to see two things happen in South America, Argentina production get nipped because of the drought. They just went through some really hot and dry weather during pollination, which is the most critical time period when it comes to production. They went through some really hot and dry weather during that time. They've seen a little bit of rain here recently as they go into grain fill, but not enough to really make folks feel confident that they'll be able to maximize production. It's important to remember Argentina doesn't necessarily have the technology that we have here in the U.S. And Brazil, if they were to cut their second crop corn production, that would be important to pay attention to. And then you have China changing policies. They're looking at cutting back their corn planting. They're looking at increasing their corn usage for ethanol. You know, so there's a slew of things that I think, you know, it's kind of like watching, you're not supposed to watch a pot, you know, watch pot never boil sort of deal. But when a pot's just getting ready to boil, you see a bunch of bubbles on the bottom. It's not in a full boil, but you see those and you know that eventually it will be. To me, those are our bubbles right now. So if we were to get, you know, perhaps a supportive report from the USDA January 12th, where maybe quarterly stocks come in a little bit lower than anticipated, that combined with the production concerns in South America and the policy changes in China, we could get a 30, 40 cent bounce out of corn pretty quickly. But then, of course, we start looking at what next spring production looks like, and there's some concerns with that and et cetera, et cetera. So corn is probably going to be one of those things where you get a window of opportunity that, you know, lets you make a decision in a moment's time you know, you better have some targets in mind and things like that on the sell side once you get that upward move. But it's going to be difficult for producers this year. It already is. And it's almost exhausting, you know, sitting down to talk to them because some just don't know how they're going to turn this red ink they have on their P&L statement to black right now.
Now, you're a libertarian, and we all know that. You make it clear every time you come on. No, that's good. So what do you think about Bitcoin?
Bitcoin? Oh, golly. I struggle, you know, and I said this the other day on Twitter, you know, I struggle with electronic currency being viewed as a commodity, you know, and I've seen plenty of arguments as to why it is. And there's a lot of people that are so much smarter than me that can give tons of reasons as to what they, you know, why they think Bitcoin is a good thing and why it'll work. You know, I honestly have not dove into it enough to really say that I am a smart person, you know, or an educated person when it comes to cryptocurrencies. I worry about how a cryptocurrency would work, you know, for all of the reasons that I worry about how, you know, a general government issued currency could work, you know, if the proverbial poo were to really hit the fan sort of deal. You know, it plays a role. I think it has become, you know, a fear of missing out sort of trade. I think there's a big push higher because people have started to hear about it. And of course, it's moving higher and it seems to be, you know, a freight train to the upside. I'll be really interested to see how it plays out. I mean, I read an article the other day that a lot of these commodity groups that have struggled with making money in grains and oil seeds and things like that are looking at that as an avenue of investment. So I'll be interested to see, but you know, I don't know. My husband and I have argued about it for years. I wish that he would have went out and bought it when he told me it was a good idea in 2014, but I'm guessing he didn't. I mean, he hasn't left yet and is his Lincoln or whatever. So I guess he's not rich. You know what I mean?
Well, maybe maybe he's hiding it. You know, that's the thing about Bitcoin. You can hide it. But I think that is more. I think the theory behind Bitcoin is more of the libertarian thinking. I mean, I'm actually, I am someone who is way against it. And then I became for it. I don't own any of it because it got away from me like everybody else who didn't get in. And I'm not going to be afraid to miss it. But I do think that it is more the libertarian way of thinking. I think that the whole message, and I'm thinking that this is a financial revolution against the central banking systems of the world and against the governments of the world, because this is a true way to, you know, kind of hide money. And I'm not that we hide it, but why should we be at the point where they devalue it? Why, in other words, why should I worry so much about corn, you know, what the dollar's doing when the government's screwing around with it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I agree. I mean, it is one of those things that like you said, it's a way to kind of take back control over the value of you know, what you have. But the unfortunate thing is just like anything else, you know, the government will likely figure out a way to ruin it, you know, and that is the struggle I have is that I don't know. Sometimes I feel like we're set up in a marketplace that you know, you're destined to lose in, which sounds really depressing. I don't know.
Apparently. Yeah, that's not Susie Sunshine. Now we're I get it. No, yeah, I get it. And I think what you're seeing is a lot of places, even, you know, offshore, they, you know, they want Bitcoin or a cryptocurrency. And I do believe that it's here to stay. It may not be the Bitcoin, but I do believe that we're going to see more of this take place. I think this is a way to, again, kind of revolt, but not the revolt now, but this is the Bubba Show. We are with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator, our star. And we want to remind you to download the show every single day at libertytalk.fm. You can see what's going on. Of course, we got the Sporting Edge, too, with bowl season coming up. So don't forget about that. And, of course, Bubba's Daily Updates, which come out every day right after the market close. You can simply sign up for them by going to bubbatrading.com, and I will deliver them free. This is the Bubba Show. Top of ours. We'll be right back with Angie Setzer after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. All right, Angie, I got a real bitch now. I'm always wondering, you know, I talk about all markets, as you know, and I'm involved in many, many different markets. And, you know, I always find it amazing that companies, when they're putting out earnings, if they know they're going to be bad, they open them up. They change. Like, if they're going to announce after the close, they decide they'll open up in the morning because they want to open bad news into a liquid market, which is the way it should be. I mean, every market, if you're going to have bad news, you should at least give the markets a chance to resolve it and not let the fear fester overnight or over days. So now we come to the cattle on feeds reports, okay, which are done. They're always done on Friday at 2:00. Now, can you tell me, what is the unbelievable stupid logic behind putting out a report that could be life-changing for many on a Friday when you get all weekend to sit there and fester about it? Because, you know, at least in equities, they're open 24 hours a day, basically, for 5 days. So you've got an opportunity. Here, you're now stuck on a Friday, you know, at 2:00 until Monday morning at, what do they open at, 9:30 Eastern time, waiting to do something. Now, can you explain to me the logic behind any imbecile that would put a report out like that at that time of day?
No, I can't explain because there's no logic behind it. I mean, it is the craziest thing, you know, I've ever seen. I mean, we have this big push to putting, because grain reports used to come out at 7:30 in the morning. So same thing. You would shut down the electronic trading, and I'm saying in Eastern time, well, that was Central, 7:30 was, but you would shut down electronic trading at like 6:30 in the morning, you know, prior to the adjustments to hours that we had. But, you know, Project A or whatever, your electronics would shut down at 6:30. You would have the USDA report come out at 8:30 Eastern time, and the market wouldn't open again until 9:15. And a lot of people threw a fit about that. And so that's why we now have our grain reports at 11 a.m. Central, is because we needed the market to be open. How the cattle folks change, I don't know if they can. I mean, I don't know if they can talk to the USDA or what, who it's a USDA number that's released. So I don't really even know, you know, how you would approach getting them out when the market is open. But it should be. I mean, in reality, I mean, that's part of probably what you're seeing with the downward move here this week, because we have a cattle on feed report out on Friday. The idea is it's going to be exceptionally bearish, of course, like the last seven have been or whatever. And so I think there's some concern, you know, folks want to exit their position before the day before the holiday happens. You know, yeah, no, it doesn't make sense to me at all as to why you would see that happen or why they would release it then, especially on a Friday afternoon. I mean, at least if it were released on a Thursday afternoon at 2:30, you'd just have to wait until the following morning. But yeah, it makes no sense. It ends up, you know, you end up seeing liquidation take place ahead of the report, you know, because we always have these bearish expectations and you tend to see the market leg significantly lower right after the open, you know, the day after the report. And then generally by noon that day, it seems like they're trading back up because, you know, most of that stuff's been factored in prior to the report coming out anyway. But yeah, it makes no sense to me. I don't know who petitions or who you have
petition,
to
petition. Just say we're going to have it on Friday at 9 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And it'd be a great Christmas present for farmers who own a lot of feeders. They'll be thrilled if it's another bearish report. I mean, they got trashed the last two that I can remember. They immediately broke down and they immediately rallied and stuck it up everybody's you know what. But I mean, again, this is something that I find to be troubling. For me, it doesn't matter, because I mean, I'm a big guy. I don't worry about reports, right? I love the trade off in many ways. So I would actually be buying. In fact, you know, the more I listen to you, the more it wants me to go out, maybe buy some calls anyways to be long through this report, because, you know, I've seen this movie before. But again, this is where these government agencies are imbeciles. They don't understand. Why would you want to put a report out? And especially before Christmas. Okay. You've got, you know, you got all these guys that are involved in this business that, you know, you're going to ruin, you could ruin a holiday for somebody. So why, what's the point behind it? So now we've got, all right, enough of my bitching. We got wheat right now. I guess there's a lot of trouble in wheat, and there's a lot of, but why, if there's so much problem out there, I mean, this is why I always go back to price, right? But there's so many troubles. And I keep hearing the ground so hard that we can't even grow, blah, 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 the whole thing. Well, why is wheat still almost near contract lows? Yeah, I know it was up 4 cents, but why is it still near contract lows? If there's so many problems, why is it near contract lows? Tell me.
We're stuck in this mindset. You know, if I hear one more person say that, you know, we have too much, we're awash in wheat globally, I'm going to lose it. You know, we are. Okay. Our carry out is in the U.S. has been pretty significant. You know, our stocks to use ratio is at a higher level than what you would see versus, oh, I don't know, 2006, 2000, you know, to 2008 when we had $8 and $10 Chicago wheat, you know. But reality is, you know, to me, it's the same thing I've talked about 1,000 times before. Everyone says this, we're awash in global wheat. 48% of the world's wheat stocks are not available to the world. They're sitting in the hands of the Chinese. They have questionable quality. They're definitely not fit for human consumption, most of them. And the Chinese buyers are importing U.S. and other wheat. You know, a lot of folks keep on pointing at the former Soviet Union, Russia in particular, and their grain production, which has been phenomenal these last few years, but it's still Russia. It's still, you know, you're still completely uncertain as to what's going to happen with their available supplies and things of that nature, you know, 6 months from now. They've increased their exports. I think they're 40 million metric ton. They're the largest wheat exporter in the world. That's super. You know, but at the same time, there are areas, you know, in interiors of the Russian, you know, area there where they have flour shortages, bread shortages, because they're exporting all of their wheat. And they're not leaving enough behind to properly feed their people. So the best way to have a happy person is to have a hungry person, right? I don't know about you, but I get pretty hangry. And so you take my bread away and you're probably going to get beat with a hoe, you know, and that's where you really have to be careful, on assuming or believing that the world is awash in all of these wheat stocks. And so right now you can't convince traders. And I would argue that, the majority of traders out there, and when I say traders, I'm talking your big money moving groups, you know, your big commodity groups and things like that. If you were to ask them, 9 out of 10 would probably repair at that line. We're awash in global stocks, you know, blah, blah, blah. No one's really taking into consideration what's going on or what is happening with Australian production. You know, they're still struggling. It does look as though they may fall below 20 million metric ton this year. They think that they were 35 last year. You've got issues in the Southern Plains. You've got issues in the soft red wheat belt. You know, the only area right now that looks like they'll really work to increase their production is the spring wheat, which we have seen, you know, the Canadian wheat production estimates have increased over the last few months. They managed to produce a pretty decent crop, even in some poorer conditions. But, you know, reality is, if we were to see a hiccup in Russian production, you know, which we're not out of the woods. It's December. You know, we've got a long time before we really know what the crop looks like. You know, you could really see a significant move higher. I wouldn't be surprised if we wouldn't see a record low number of winter wheat acres planted in the January 12th report that comes out. So we're waiting to see, you know, what the USDA says about winter wheat plantings. And so we'll just definitely have to watch that market set up and just kind of wait for the market to go from this idea of burdensome supplies to suddenly realizing that, you know, yeah, we do have a lot of supplies available, but some of them may not be, you know, what we want. In the Southern Plains, you have a lot of feed wheat, which is unfortunate for corn, but, you know, you have lower protein values that won't make their way into the pipeline, and other things that are going on. So, I mean, to me right now, I just get frustrated with wheat, you know, but we'll have to wait and just continue to watch and monitor that market, because we really are one production hiccup away from significantly higher prices because our
all right, I gotta cut you off, but I am long wheat and I'm bullish Andy Setzer, and Merry Christmas to you and your family. Thank you so much. This is Andy Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains. It's another. Thanks, Andy. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. When it's cold
outside. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.